To say, hey, welcome. We're back from Thanksgiving break. This is Brian Bogart Has a Podcast, the podcast, with me in the studio today, which is becoming a pretty regular occurrence, and I'm not complaining, but my cousin, Julian Goza.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm not complaining either. This is lovely. Anytime you ask me to come by to do this.
Oh, you're practically my co-host at this point. I think you're more popular than I am on my own podcast. That's, you know.
Is that what your stats are telling me?
Yeah. The streams are clear. They want more Julian. And we have a lot of fun stuff to talk about. It's been such an interesting couple weeks, personally, globally, everything in between. And we have stuff we want to talk about, but right off the bat, you attended the Celine fashion show last night, didn't you?
Yes, their fall-winter 2023 collection. And it was their first in-person runway show since before the pandemic.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. I have the benefit of having a friend that works at Celine, so he invited a big group of us to go. I was frankly underwhelmed by the clothes.
I was like, the next word out of his mouth is going to be underwhelmed. Whenever you preface anything with frankly, the next word after that is underwhelmed always.
But it was like homage to like 2006 boho chic. When I say that, what do you picture, Brian? Because that's gay insider information.
I mean, okay, 2006. I guess I know what boho chic is. Boho, mm-hmm. You know, bohemian, right?
Big hats, big bags, right. Lots of necklaces.
Couture. What? Okay, how do you define couture?
Well, that's
I just see that get thrown so much around fashion and
the term
style.
Is overused.
Yes, okay.
You have to actually. There's like an accreditation system in France that determines whether you're like a legitimate couturier.
Like if it comes from the Champagne region, it's couture.
Exactly, exactly. And it has to be like a certain level of quality. A certain amount of labor has to go into it by like little old French ladies that spend hours pouring over, you know, each bead of a beautiful gown.
Yeah.
I don't really think it applies to like ready to wear. When you hear the term ready to wear, that's like everyday clothing. Couture implies it's more evening wear, it's red carpet, it's elevated.
Okay, so couture, I guess more in like night clothes or dress clothes, formal in a way?
Yeah, it's more formal, exactly. Even though night clothes is pretty broad.
Yes, it is.
I mean, that arena looks totally different than it did 30
years ago. We won't open up that can of worms.
No.
We'll start with what do I think of in boho chic? I think of a lot of black. And I think big hat. When I think of New York style, in fact, I think of black.
Yeah, but boho chic to me doesn't necessarily pertain to New York style.
Okay, go ahead.
I think, honestly, if you want to look at the history of it, who championed
it's French, right?
Boho chic.
Well, but bohemian. I mean, the whole advent of bohemian lifestyle.
Like 120
years
ago.
Yeah, see, count it. Yeah, that counts. Sorry, go ahead.
No, but so around 2000, I want to say 4 or 5, there was a stylist named Rachel Zoe. She styled all the icons of the mid-aughts, from the Olsen twins to Lindsay Lohan to Nicole Richie. And she, you know, decked him out in a bunch of bangles and those big Balenciaga biker bags.
And are the trucker hats involved with this at all?
No, that's now referred to as Y2K fashion.
Okay.
Y2K style is different than boho chic because it came before boho chic.
Oh, really?
So like baby G watches, Hello Kitty.
Sequentially.
Yes.
The Y2K fashion came before.
Came before.
Boho chic. Okay.
Yes.
They coexisted, right? To some degree.
Yeah. There was a little bit of overlap. Men are obviously always a little late to the game. So while Nicole Richie was looking gorgeous in a bunch of bangles and big sunglasses and like a flowy top, you still had Ashton Kutcher
was still rocking the trucker hat.
Yeah. And like wide leg diesel jeans, which are back. But don't send me down that path.
Am I
Brian.
Crazy in saying that there is a resurgence of Y2K fashion?
100%.
Yeah.
And so I was reading reviews on the show I saw last night. I woke up today and was eager to read a bunch of reviews from all these different fashion outlets. And some of them are maligning this throwback to boho chic aesthetic.
Because of the expectations it puts on people's bodies? I've seen that before too, because
it was, they were fashion outlets, Brian, not a Dove commercial.
Okay, that's okay, but I have seen a lot of criticism about, like, oh my god, you know, these fashions put so much pressure on people being a certain size when it happened that now we don't want to return to that. But that's more of the Huffington Post, BuzzFeed think piece, not from the fashion industry so much. The fashion industry couldn't give a fuck.
Right.
In fact, they probably like that they don't like it a little bit.
Well, and the argument is to be made that, like, fashion should be aspirational and it's harder to be skinny than fat. So those are my thoughts on that. I do think you could be I like Paloma. I don't know if you know that plus size model. There are, like, really gorgeous plus size models out there.
Yeah.
But I do also understand fashion's want to be something that's a little less easy to attain. That's honestly what makes it high fashion.
Right.
And it's fast fashion.
It's got high fashion in it. Yeah. You know, it is you know, aspirational. But yeah. And that's just why, I don't know, I'm not, like, obviously a big fan. Like, I just don't care as much. But
you don't
yes.
need to.
I know it's not for me.
You have staples; they work.
It's.
I think for me, there's a difference between fashion and style. And style is consistency, and it's what looks good on you specifically. Right. It transcends trend. It transcends these weird zeitgeist moments. And so that's actually a nice segue to talk about the designer behind Celine. His name's Eddie Slimane. And or maybe Eddie Slimin, I don't know. My friend that works at Slim.
But we're going to talk about him. We don't talk about him.
He's known for perpetuating this very skinny archetype, always twiggy little models in skin-tight jeans, a lot of, like, long neckties and loose blazers and stuff. And so I appreciate the silhouette and stuff. I just found it derivative and, like, a little tired. And I don't know. And my friend that works for Celine, oddly enough, wears, like, a lot of wide leg pants, to where it's starting to influence my own understanding of, like, what a pant should look like.
So that's fun.
I'm in the market for a nice wide leg pair of trousers.
So you saw the Celine fashion show.
And then it turned into a concert.
Oh.
With Iggy Pop.
Wow.
Who's, like, 75 years old and just shaking his bedraggled ass across the stage.
Let's see.
Bedraggled.
He is
70?
75 on the dot.
Boom.
Yeah.
What's crazy. The sign?
Looks
oh,
great.
We don't know his birthday.
We'll
an icon. I've seen him a few times, and last time he was, like, particularly chaotic. And I think it's because he was, like, performing for this more exclusive event. Like, he doesn't give a shit. He's just there to collect his check of, like, whatever, $10,000 or however much they're paying him. After that, it was the Strokes.
Cool. And I saw that in your story.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it was their deeper cuts. It was their
juice box.
It was their more alty, their more dissonant kind of work. Not the just from the song that I saw in your story. It wasn't their crowd pleasing pop hits necessarily.
I don't know. I actually am not a huge fan. I only know the one album that they came out with the juice box on. Everybody sees me, but it's not that easy. Standing in the light, you know that one.
Yeah.
Why won't you come over here? The reason why I know that is because my brother would play it every fucking day when he would drive me to school.
Aw.
No, it was annoying. But of course,
watching it in concert, you're like full circle.
And it made me wistful of driving with my brother.
Aw, there you go.
Fuck the Strokes.
Just for those asking, Iggy Pop is a Taurus.
Oh, he's a Taurus. Yeah. He's very earthen.
Taurus is earth sign?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go.
Even though they usually wear more things than Iggy Pop wears.
You could, like, tell me, but
Dennis Rodman is a great example of a Taurus. Like, they have, like, earrings and, like, pierced nipples and shit.
I don't know, but I'm sure I could tell you Iggy Pop was a water sign or an air sign or a fire sign, and you could be like, oh, I see that.
Well, we all contain multitudes, Brian, and if you showed me his full chart, I'm sure he has at least two of the three
elements. All right, we don't have time to get into his full chart today. We'll do it at another episode. Yeah, go ahead.
But anyway, we digress. So the show was fine, the concerts were cool, and then on my way out, I saw a guy that looked at me, and I looked at him.
Okay.
But we walk right past each other, but I turn around, Brian, and he turns around.
And you never turn around.
Yeah, I never turn around.
Wow.
But he was cute. And so I walk up to him and I go, why were you staring at me?
Smooth, dude. Smooth.
And he goes, because you're cute. And I was like, I think you're cute too.
Damn.
And then me being a tone deaf bitch, I was like, so what are you, Middle Eastern? Like, what flavor am I picking up on?
Oh, no.
And he thankfully handled it with grace and laughed and was like, I'm Mexican, you fool. Needless to say, we went back to mine. Hooked up for hours on end. I dropped him off today at like 11 a.m.
Wow.
The man is a dime, Brian. Let me show you what he looks like.
All right, we'll throw out a photo to our watchers.
No, I'm not going to fucking show our watchers.
What's his name? What's his at? Follow him, DM him.
This loads.
Tell him to call Julian back.
What do you mean? How presumptuous of you? He would respond, but I have not called him at all. But I did drop him off. Let me show you, like, the thottiest photo of him, though.
He's got abs.
He's got abs. He got ass. Just to really...
This is right up your alley, right? Aesthetically.
Literally, like...
You...
I love, like, Latino, Middle Eastern, you know?
And if they're Latino, but could be mistaken for Middle Eastern, well, that's your holy grail.
Yeah, for sure. Although on my way to dropping him off, he was, like, getting into the details of, like, how he still has, like, joint custody of the dog with his ex-boyfriend, who's still very much in his life.
It's funny, the problems in gay relationships, so much more minimal compared, because whenever this guy's like, oh man, I met this girl, I loved her, oh man, there's another guy in the picture though, and she's got two kids and all this stuff, like, the absolute most dramatic it can get, they share custody of the dog with his ex.
Gay people have kids.
Well,
they just don't love them.
Let me speak generally.
That's obviously a joke. I think, I don't know, I don't have any.
I'm sure there are gay people who love their kids.
Yeah, yeah.
We're out there.
We're like very loving people.
Yeah.
So he's great. I miss him already. Fuck me. Like, what am I to do?
What'd you get yourself into?
What did I get myself into? And it's always at these late night events where I'm like, eh, fuck it. You missed 100% of the shots you don't take, you know?
You took that one.
Y'all
took it together.
It was fiery. And I guessed his sign right, Brian. Well, I didn't guess his sign. I guessed the element. He's a Leo.
He's a Leo.
A Latin Leo.
That shirtless selfie kind of tipped the hand a little bit.
Yeah, I guess water signs also take shirtless photos.
Oh my gosh. So then after the show, you also wanted to talk about the whale, right?
So I dropped him off. He was like, what are you doing today? I was like, I don't know. I got to figure it out. In my mind, I was like, bitch, I'm going to the Grove to eat a sandwich and marmalade. I ended up getting a lobster Benny. It was delicious. And then I saw the whale. And it was at the Dolby Theater within the AMC. So it's like the chairs recline all the way and stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
And for your listeners that aren't keeping up with the Oscar bait du jour, there is a film called The Whale that is lauded as like Brendan Fraser's comeback.
Right.
Where they put him in this just grotesque fat suit with, you know, bulging ankles. And I mean, they really, it's like a body horror film. I mean, they really don't shy away from like, you know, this level of
this guy is disgusting. Fucking fat. Like unholy, ungodly amounts of fat and excess skin and everything. It doesn't look like Brendan Fraser. He looks like a bowling ball.
Well, as someone with little eyes, I was frustrated because I'm like, of course they got the actor with the biggest eyes in the world to be in a fat suit. Like, this is how women in red states probably felt when they saw Charlize Theron in Monster. They were like, wait, I could have played that.
Yeah,
I don't have eyebrows.
Why'd you get this glammed up, bitch? You know, to tell my story.
Big, gorgeous blue eyes. Like, shut up. Yeah. But the reason why I bring up the fact that the chairs were reclining is because I felt like his character, like while I'm like shoveling popcorn in my mouth, like I was like, we are all the whale.
Like game recognized game.
Yeah, exactly.
Just two little Jabba the Hutts.
Exactly. And obviously they released it early December because it's like, you know, it's we're getting into award season. So obviously the later the release date, usually the better the chances are of it being noticed by a larger audience and getting more nominations. But I found it overwrought. It's based on a play. Wow. I bet it would slap on stage.
So the hype is bigger than the movie, in your opinion?
I think so.
Wow.
Also, though, like...
Because I think people heard about it when it premiered at the same festival as Don't Worry, Darling. Wait, Venice, right? That was a pretty big deal in the pop culture world was Don't Worry, Darling was going up in flames while Brendan Fraser was reintroducing himself to the world.
Got a 10-minute standing ovation.
Yeah, yeah. So now the public is starting to see really both of those movies. And it's funny because Don't Worry, Darling now has pretty good reviews. And The Whale, I mean, I don't know what the
really?
Reviews are.
What's the audience rating for Don't Worry, Darling? I promise we wouldn't talk about that damn movie again.
We're over it. Here we go.
It's on HBO Max. It's done.
Yeah.
You should watch it, guys, if you haven't. It's really an entertaining film. Don't Worry, Darling. That is. Which, frankly, I found more redeemable than The Whale.
So once again, always go by the audience score. The critics scored a 38%. Audience, 74%.
74.
That tells me this is probably a pretty good movie. But I hate Rotten Tomatoes, especially, and in particular, the critic rating, because I just
also,
never...
Also, you know it's owned by, like, all the studios.
I know, and this like, was a very disruptive...
What could go wrong?
This was a very disruptive movie, probably for just Hollywood in general. It made people look bad, so they probably would rather people just forgot this movie existed.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's just... one of, you know, X number of reasons.
Right. I know it's still a new release, but look at the audience rating for The Whale.
Okay.
Because overall...
Here's my call. I'll bet the critic score is going to be better than the audience score.
I bet so, too.
All right. The Whale.
I bet so, too. Because, again, tomatoes. People are like, my Uncle Johnny could have been The Whale. Why do they get Brendan Fraser? Formerly George of the Jungle.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, it's not
out yet. It does not have an audience score yet. It's been out for so long.
No, The Whale, it came out like
2 years. On the festival circuit, at least. So I feel like it should have gotten some, at least preliminary.
They don't let regular audience members to go to.
But 69% on.
That's about what I'd give it.
Right, and that's not that good for the critics.
No.
For this movie.
Well, you know, this is the same director, Darren Aronofsky, who did Requiem for a Dream.
And I love Darren Aronofsky.
He kind of like, I enjoy his films,
right?
But it's kind of, he always like, I don't think he realizes his films are campier
than they are,
than they intend to be.
He does them completely unironically, is what you're saying. And there should be more irony dripped into this.
Yeah. And I'm sure this was great on stage as a play, but like seeing it in a film, like the dialogue just seems really heavy handed to where I was like kind of enjoying how melodramatic some of it is. And I thought to myself at one point, I was like, this could be a camp classic, but visually speaking, it's not bright enough.
Right.
And there's only one exception to that rule, and it's the Babadook.
Okay. Wow. Was not expecting the Babadook to get mentioned on this podcast today. With Aronofsky films, I feel like I have to really like the subject matter or what he's chasing in the movie to really, because he's so in on that world. He really, you know, paints that whole picture for you. Like, you know, Black Swan, mm-hmm. right? If you're not big on ballet or at least like sympathetic to ballet, it's probably, you know, like the horror elements of it might get overshadowed by just how overt, you know, this culture kind of permeates. The Wrestler I liked a lot.
Because, The Wrestler's good.
Yeah, that might be my favorite of his.
Maybe me too. I mean, Requiem fucked me up. I've never rewatched that just because it was too intense.
Yeah.
And I gotta give that credit, because if a movie fucks me up that much as a seasoned cinephile, I'm like, you know what? Go off, bitch. Scare the shit out of
you
me.
You did something. And that was a while ago. I mean, when was Requiem? That was
late 90s. Yeah, like 99.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. If The Whale's showing, support smaller films. Don't go see, you know, whatever.
Smaller films starring 90s A-listers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, quite a 12-hour streak I just had.
Yeah. Well, we also had you here because it is wrapping up as far as the year goes. The year's almost over. And this is a good time to release really top 10 lists on anything. You keep a more diligent top 10 list than about anyone else that I know, just for your own private archives, your own private records. So I'm so curious what your top 10 movies, books, TV shows, everything really. Whatever you have a top 10 list of, I want to know about it, and I want the audience to know about it too. So
okay,
how do you want to kick this off?
Well, full disclosure, it's all on my computer. I only have my top 10 films, but I could, from memory, I could mention some albums that I liked as well.
We'll focus on the films right now.
Let's focus on the films, because that's also where I think my taste is more credible. Like, I feel like...
You're not as credible of a music listener as you are a film watcher.
I just think there's more room for, like, enjoyment with music. Like, music does seem like it could be more subjectively enjoyed than a film.
Sure.
I don't know. I know that may be a hot take to some. And that's also because I pitch my tent in the film world. I'm not a musician.
Right.
So if I enjoy it, cool. But I'm not like, they did that wrong. You know what I mean? The way I am.
A musician
films.
Probably would. For a lot of albums I listen to, I was like, is this fun? They're like, no, it's not actually, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, too many minor notes. I'm like, what? like, I don't even know what that is. All right, let's talk about my films. I'll start with The Holy Trinity of 2022.
Okay, what's The Holy Trinity?
Number one.
You don't want to count down 10 from one?
Oh, that's fun. Let's do all 10.
Sorry to tease y'all with The Holy Trinity. We'll get to The Holy Trinity and the latter part of this list, but go ahead. What was your top 10?
Starting with 10. We Are All Going to the World's Fair.
Never saw it.
It's on HBO.
Okay.
Number 9, The Northman.
I liked it. It's Hamlet.
It is
it's
Hamlet.
It's literally Hamlet. His name in the movie was... No, so the Lion King, bitch. I like it. No, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, it was just like... there were people who were like, what does it all mean? I was like, it's Shakespeare. Like, it means that they adapted this script really well.
Yeah.
And his name was Amleth. It's an anagram of Hamlet.
Right. Well, and I think Hamlet was based on this Viking tale, wasn't it? So technically, The Northmen came first. The 2022 film, The Northmen, came before the 1596 play.
1596?
I have no fucking
idea. Okay, I knew it was the 1500s. But I was like, damn, to the year we know when Hamlet came out?
Number 8, you probably haven't heard of this one, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, about famed photographer Nan Golden.
Oh, I remember when he told me about seeing that one.
It was really good. We'll get into these individually, but number 7, Peter von Kant, or von Kant, not sure how to say that. But I liked the movie. Some of these are deep cuts, as you could see. Number 6, The Princess, Princess Di documentary.
Right, it was all with archival footage, right?
Yeah, no talking
heads.
It was
very well done.
It was haunting.
I'm shocked. So it was haunting, and it was well done. I'm like kind of surprised that qualifies for the list in a way.
Because it's a documentary.
Yeah, more or less. And like a documentary without a narrator or like there's a narrative, I guess, because it's
completely... Well, that's what made it so transcendent to the form.
So yes, I get it. That's why I'm happy for you to count it. I just didn't know that I would see it in there. But hey...
I really don't want to fight about this.
No, I'm not here to fight. I agree. It was definitely one of the films that stuck with me the most this year, you know?
Yes. So, I know. I hadn't gotten stoned in a really long time. And then I got stoned right before seeing that. And I was just like, so maybe that's why it also slapped so hard. But I was just like, God, this is fucked up.
It was good. For someone who was minimally stoned when I saw it, it was as good.
Yeah. So to recap, 10 through 6, we're all going to the World's Fair. Number 10. Number 9, The Northmen. Number 8, Northmen. Number 8, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed. 7, Peter von Kant. 6, The Princess. Let's get into top 5.
All right. This is when it gets serious.
Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris.
Don't know it.
It's lighter fare. It's about this woman that's obsessed with getting a Dior gown. And she's like, comes from the hovels.
That could be either like very airy and light or very tragic, depending on how it's done.
It was very airy and light. That's good. I want my mom to see it.
Yeah, I don't want like poverty porn of like me neither. Wealth I'm over inequality. It. So, yeah, I saw Parasite. I don't need Parasite 2, but with Dior.
Right. Number 4. This is, and 1 through 4 is where it gets really
tough,
stiff.
Okay, yeah.
Number 4, which I saw with you, Marcel the Shell with shoes on.
We saw that together.
Loved it.
Delight.
Yeah. And I'd never seen the YouTube videos, so when I went into
it. I was familiar with the YouTube, and I love Jenny Slate too. And
I know, Brian.
Story behind the film. All right.
Give we don't have to. Roar in there.
But we don't have to, like knowing the background about like I always knew that she did that with her husband, and I knew that they were divorced. And then when I saw that when the movie came out, I was like, I know that was both their intellectual property. How do they do that? And apparently it's very,
goals.
Very painful, very long, you know, cause they've been working on the movie for a long time. And then I guess finally like found the time to put their differences aside, or the heartache and the drama and everything, and just like finish this really well done movie for something that they both believed in, even though it's gotta be fucking difficult.
Yeah, I love picturing the emails. Hey Jen, still waiting on that AR or whatever.
You must be out with Mike again.
Yeah, exactly. Number 3, let's get into it. Why are we stopping? Tar. With Cate Blanchett.
Right. That was the female Me Too story.
Yes.
Dive into that one a little bit for us.
So I thought this was based on a real powerhouse lesbian conductor. That's what she plays in this film, who's slowly seeing everything fall apart because there are allegations made against her. And she made a good point that Cate Blanchett did in an interview. She made a good point that making this character a female brings more nuance to the whole narrative around Me Too. And so it's...
No, if you told the story with a male main character, it would just be received and interpreted differently.
Yeah.
So having a female lead who's, in essence, getting Me Too'd, you know, opens up more, more gray areas and just more dialogue. Because now we can feel like we can, like, criticize her and also
see
her point of view. Yeah. And empathize with her in a way that we just would not feel as comfortable if it was a man.
Yeah. And it's kind of a slow burn of a film. In fact, I don't know if you know, but in L.A., especially when it's like a newer release, if the audience likes the film, they'll clap upon the credits.
Right.
No one clapped except me during Tar.
Wow.
Which was kind of upsetting to me because I was like, guys, this is like a very good film. And Kate Blanchett in particular is amazing. I saw her, I was front row once to see her play Blanche in Streetcar Named Desire.
Oh, cool.
And it was like seeing a ghost, right? Like she had the ability to look through, literally look through me while I was sitting 10 feet from her.
Wow.
It was one of the best theater experiences of my life.
All right. So number three was Tar.
Number three was Tar with celebrated actress and inimitable force, Kate Blanchett.
Kate Blanchett.
Number two, which I saw with you, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
So good. It was just a mind-blowing movie.
I agree.
A mind-blowing. And seeing it in theaters, that was one of my first since COVID that I've seen like in theaters early this year. But God, lived up to the hype.
Yeah.
There was no hype because I didn't know what the movie was about. I think you had a better idea. But then,
because I'm always quick to see them. I don't think hype had fully built yet.
No.
At least among like mainstream viewers.
Right. But then as soon as we walked out, we were both like, this movie's going to be huge.
Yeah.
We both had that.
And it's still rumored to get nominations and stuff. And it was released in April. So
you
removed
earlier.
The whale.
I thought, well, we saw, I guess, an earlier screening. Right. I think we saw it like in February or something like that.
I don't think so. I want to say it was like
spring. It was very early in the year though to be
it was
Oscar
it was honestly the first film I saw this year that I was like, well shit, okay.
And didn't know we were releasing these movies in early part of the
year. Yeah, exactly. And cinema's back, man. Like the last 2 years were like kind of grim.
They were. I feel like it was Hollywood sending out all the shit that they filmed that would not test at all. Like
yeah.
Oh my, like some of like To Those Who Wish Me Dead.
I never saw
that. We watched it together. The Angelina Jolie movie.
Oh, yeah.
That was like one of the worst movies I've seen in a long time. And I was like, this is supposed to be an Angelina Jolie blockbuster, you know, release a stream
right.
And all that. That was when I was clearly like, okay, you guys are really phoning it in or either just like sending out stuff.
Which also brings up an interesting point that like just because they're a movie star doesn't – we're now in this weird phase where there's so many films that a movie star does not a good movie make.
Yeah.
Or
even a popular movie, even not like a, like you
or
can
even
have
a
star
movie. Yeah.
You can have a star and it gets no distribution.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so going back to Everything Everywhere All at Once, Laurie, my sister, and her son Michael loved it.
Yeah.
They live in South Texas. I mean, the only films that those theaters get are like Bible movies and like The Rock, whatever The Rock's vehicle of the
and
month.
And your latest Fast and Furious.
Yeah, exactly. So for it to make it all the way down there, it's an A24 picture. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Good job, people who made that movie.
Yeah, honestly. Which brings me to number one.
Ooh.
So we talked about how Parasite is poverty porn. This tackles the same themes, but it's rich people porn.
Okay.
And it's called Triangle of Sadness.
Never heard of it.
Really?
Never heard of it.
I thought I told you about it.
You probably did, but outside of, you know, you probably gushing about it, no press, have not seen it show up anywhere.
Well, it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, which
right.
is the highest.
I'm not that cultured. I know Palme d'Or is a big
yeah.
deal in Cannes, but yeah, I have not been keeping up with the Cannes
keeping
awards.
Up with the Cannesians.
Yeah.
But it was honestly such a fun film to watch with audiences. There's like a lot of like gross out humor that just reaches this like unbelievable crescendo. And John Waters in his comedy special.
So John Waters.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, no,
okay,
no.
Okay.
But he talks in his comedy special about being a little kid and seeing, God, I wish I remembered the name of the horror film. But it was like a 1950s, you know, B horror film.
Right, like The Thing. You
know? Yeah, exactly. It was like House on Haunted Hill or something, the original. And he talks about how a skeleton it was rigged up in the ceiling to fall onto the audience during a certain part of the film. And everyone just has such a visceral reaction in the moment.
It's like Cats, you know, when they come out of the audience.
Yeah, exactly. And so there were certain scenes in Triangle of Sadness that seemed to engage with the audience so much.
Oh, that's cool.
That it reminded me of John Waters' anecdote of the skeleton falling from the roof of the theater.
Wow.
And it was one of those where immediately after the film, I saw people that didn't know each other standing around smoking cigarettes, talking about it.
Wow.
I was like, this is what film should be, man.
Triangle of Sadness.
Triangle of Sadness. Look it up. I don't know what streaming... Oh, it's all available online.
And you know, you have Woody Harrelson, but he's probably the best known name out of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's... So this director is... Swedish, I think.
Let's see. Ruben Östlund. He does have the umlaut over the O.
Oh, yeah, he's Swedish. Okay, cool. Yeah. Did you ever see Force Majeure, which they remade with Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
No.
And apparently the remake was not very good, but they didn't need to make it because the original's great. And it's good. He's good at like tackling gender roles and wealth. He also did a movie called The Square that kind of satirizes the art world. So he's really good at poking fun at rich people and showing how grotesque they could be.
Yeah.
So this, and it's like a 2.5 hour film that starts during Fashion Week, which is kind of apropos of talking about Celine and stuff. Starts during Fashion Week. Then it takes the audience to this luxury yacht where these different couples are staying. And then tragedy befalls them. And the third act of the film all takes place on a desert island.
Okay.
So it's a journey. And it was,
I love that.
It was fun. It was just a fun movie. Something, though, worth mentioning about these lists. Sometimes, and I shouldn't do this, but sometimes I'll go back to the list, like, years later and be like, oh, wow, that was number one? No, that's number three. Number three is number one.
it doesn't surprise me. I think that's pretty, like, typical when it comes to just people's taste and how our taste evolves.
And, yeah.
And, you know, like you said that you saw that one movie. You know, you saw The Princess when you were stoned.
Super stoned.
Which maybe is what got it top five.
Context is everything.
Yeah.
My dad, when he saw Everything Everywhere, which I was convinced he would love, he was like, which to this day, I still don't know what this means, but he was like, it felt like a long TikTok video. And
which I just don't agree with.
I think what he meant is there's a lot of cuts.
There are a lot of quick cuts.
Which like, well, yeah, it's about the multiverse.
And it's a very aesthetic film. You know, like you do have like outrageous costumes and stuff like that.
Yeah, but like he turned me onto The Matrix and shit. So I'm like this like kind of frantic editing style and like action heavy sequences shouldn't shy him away.
Right.
Because I got my cinephilia from my cinephilic dad.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the only Felix and files to be
to be proud to that, call yourself.
Yeah. Hey, my dad's a file, cinephile.
Yeah.
God damn. Well, thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, and I hope he listens to this, and I hope he feels shame about the fact that he didn't like what is a pretty solidly universally liked movie.
Yeah, Jim, give it another shot. You know,
give it another shot, man. I was watching an interview between Michelle Yeoh, who is the main actress in Everything Everywhere, and she was talking with Cate Blanchett.
that's quite the formidable duo.
Oh, yeah. I had to go to this front to the fashion show, so I couldn't finish it, but that's definitely next. The next thing I'm watching. Yeah, it's cool to see these like two very formidable women talking to each other. It's that series called Actors on Actors.
Oh, okay.
So they'll get all these Oscar contenders to talk to each other.
Yeah. About how good they are.
Pretty much. The first like 10 minutes of the 40 is just like, you were so brilliant. And, you know, it's like, all right. Play the
fast
hits.
Forward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A few albums I want people to check out. Let me think about this. Honestly, music was kind of underwhelming this year.
Oh, wow.
I liked the Charlie XCX album.
Because I'm gay.
Yeah.
We get it. You like Charlie XCX. No, it's very catchy.
Yeah.
She makes very catchy music.
Yeah. What else?
Viagra Boys. What did she get so big?
Boom, clap, sound of my heart. Boom, clap, sound. Come on to me, come on to me. It's a very like Gwen Stefani endeavor.
It is.
You know? But this was good. It was like kind of a throwback to House, which I feel like is having a definite revival. Obviously, Beyonce's album. Which at first I was like not very into, and it felt kind of overproduced.
There are some good tracks, and I like the disco kind of through line of it.
Me too. Fuck, I wish I'd brought that list though, because I don't really have it. Sabrina Carpenter, who allegedly Olivia Rodrigo's Driver's License, that song was written about.
I feel like that's got to be some kind of PR ploy.
Maybe,
you know, right? Like
maybe, but it'd also be annoying to be like, not maligned in this song, but like the other girl in this popular song that everyone's singing at the top.
But that's how I learned about her, was knowing about that.
Sabrina Carpenter?
Yeah. That's how I knew that she exists was because she might be the other girl in the Driver's License song. And so, oh, now I know who Sabrina Carpenter is all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Like, how inconvenient for her.
Well, now I know her for putting out a really good album this year. Bless you.
Thank you.
It's called Emails I Can't Send. And it's just one pop ditty after another.
I love that album title.
Emails I Can't Send.
Oh,
isn't that good?
On,
it's loaded.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm going to re-listen to this and I'm going to like slam my face against the wall when I realize I'm forgetting like my most favorite album. But that's a testament to the fact that this year I was like, it's all kind of a wash.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, for sure. But going back, I feel like we did some films dirty when I was going through the 10.
Yeah.
Like, we're all going to the World's Fair, which I mentioned is on HBO.
Yes.
It's interesting. It starts with this girl doing, like, you know those challenges? Like, the ALS challenge. Like, I pour ice on you.
Challenge. Yeah. Yeah.
She starts with, like, I don't even remember what the challenge is called. But she's doing this weird challenge, like, to a webcam. So much of it is done...
Because we're all going to the World's Fair sounds like a film that would take place in the 1920s.
It's very contemporary.
But it's contemporary.
And so she's doing this challenge, and apparently once you commit to doing this challenge, weird shit happens to you. And so it's really nebulous, and it's kind of an exploration of how weird online culture is. And then she starts corresponding with this other user online, and she's not really sure what their real identity is. It's kind of like a very mumblecore horror thriller.
With some catfish elements to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, I never took that away. Yeah, I would have never picked that up just from the title or like what poster I've seen of them.
I know. I'm trying to think what other film I did dirty on our countdown. The Northman we talked about. That's number 9. Number 8, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed. There is this photographer named Nan Golden who would photograph all of these really intense nightlife scenes in New York, was like a opiate junkie. So a lot of her photos deal with addiction and stuff. But she's also very instrumental in erasing the Sacklers' name.
Oh, wow.
From all the museums and stuff. So this documentary is clever because it kind of weaves... It's filming the actual photographer looking at a slideshow of her work, talking about her body of work, and then they weave it together with actual scenes of her meeting with this group of activists trying to get rid of the Sackler name.
Wow.
Who, of course, that's the family that you know, mass-produced all of these... Oxycontin. Yeah, and killed so many fucking people. So it's cool that there's kind of this thorough line between all the things she's done and its addiction. And yeah, just really interesting backstory. I'd seen her photographs in museums and had loved them. They have a very profound effect on me when I look at them. But just knowing more about her life, her sister was committed to an insane asylum back in the 50s and 60s when they would just casually do that if they had anyone remotely rebellious, you know? So it's cool how this like really fucked up backstory informed these beautiful photos that are disturbing by all accounts. So All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, would recommend. And then Peter von Kant is based on a film called Petra von Kant. And it's about this, like, disillusioned actress. I feel like I'm butchering the synopsis.
you saw it.
I know, but it was a while ago. But this is, like, the gay version of this older film.
Okay.
So he's, like, this, like, distraught, like, gay director who has this, like, twinky little assistant that follows him around.
Nice.
That, like, obviously loves the director, but the director can't be bothered to even look towards the assistant.
Oh.
It's kind of salacious and fun and, like, cheeky. And those are three descriptors that are very qualifying for me.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I'm on board with that too. Anything that like leads into the cheekiness of gay culture, that's just a good time for the family.
Yeah. And he's just drinking all the time and throws things and his family's like, get a grip, you know? Yeah.
I'm just like, ooh, it's like a Ryan Murphy movie or something.
Yeah, exactly. But it was European, Brian.
Yeah, I know.
Ryan Murphy can't make European films.
They did it more sophisticated.
Yeah. we talked about The Princess. And then number 5, I do want to talk about Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. Again, about that that poor little British lady, and all she wants in the whole world is a Dior dress. And it takes place in the 50s, back when these runway shows were super exclusive. They'd bring in like maybe like 10 rich wives that would all sit there. And it was like maybe 20 looks. Like last night, I saw maybe 100. Wow. I mean, just the scale of production was so much smaller back in the 50s. And so you see all of the obstacles that are thrown her way just because she's a poor little lady that saved everything she had to afford a Dior dress. It's such a simple, beautiful, understated story.
Yeah, that's up there on my list of the ones that I want to see.
I think
out of your list.
It.
Yeah. There's a few. And Triangle Sadness sounds really great too.
I would rewatch that with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that kind of sums up my top 10 you know.
Cool.
Maybe the guy I fucked last night will listen to this and call me.
And he'll be like, hey, so that your taste in movies. Also,
I'll be like, I want to share the dog too.
Can we do triple custody?
We're going to be Polly with the dog.
So thank you for that list. That was one of the things we wanted to cover. And then another one.
Oh, yeah.
With what time we have to. And I'll just ask this extremely open-ended.
Okay.
What do you think of the AI-generated art craze?
Well, immediately, I was like, damn, everyone looks hot. And then my second thought was, something ain't right in the milk. You know, like, there's, whatever that expression is, I'm like, there's something in the milk.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because you and I privately had talked about this, and you really illuminated for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have my own feelings. I just want to, you know, I want to get a fresh perspective with, like, no context, and then we could fill in the context in a little bit. But
yeah. Well, the first complaint I found about it, obviously, I had been aware of, like, facial recognition technology.
Right.
As someone that's already, like, begrudgingly has a TikTok, and I'm like, why am I giving the Chinese intelligence agencies this much information?
Fair point. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
It's like, we are loading the gun here and putting it to our head, y'all. Like, I don't even...
For what?
For, well, like, to look cute, and, like, to, like, those are nice-looking portraits. Oh, it, like, it's a very, like, Victorian... Well, no, it probably goes before
some
that.
Of them are, like, steampunk. Some of them are, like... some are Victorian. Some are Middle Earth, you know? I mean, it just really depends, But yeah, go on.
Well, and so I was clicking through stories, and one of the few stories I saw that wasn't one of these AI-generated portraits was one of our friends who, and I mean this not in a disparaging way, is very woke, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
they've got their finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
In terms of just kind of seeing...
You know, call bullshit when they see it.
Yeah. Whether or not I agree with when they're calling bullshit.
Right.
And they had said that the technology somehow rips off artists' work.
Sure.
Which I don't fully understand that. Maybe you could explain that to me. Like, so this was already like...
The short answer is that the AI is using a composite of hundreds of thousands of original artworks created by artists.
It's a composite?
Yeah. I mean, they draw that inspiration from artwork that was created by people.
Oh.
So in a way, you're borrowing the IP... not even borrowing, but pretty outrightly stealing it, of these original works.
But it's a composite.
Well, they, I mean, like, all the painting that the AI does is from, you know, blending all these different art styles. And now AI art is winning art awards at festivals.
Right.
And that's really pissing off a lot of artists.
And, I mean, here I go kind of being cerebral about this, but to me, like... art with a capital A, art needs to have a quality of the divine.
Uh-huh.
And I think when it comes from a machine, you are kind of surpassing the potential to have that.
But the creators of that technology will tell you, well, this is the divine. We have created this divine.
Yeah. And that's a fair counterpoint.
And then the simps who post their portraits, their AI portraits, will say, yeah, they'll agree because it gave them this ego boost.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a frontier that we don't yet know.
Well, and to what degree, I know that working at several tech companies in my career, the one thing I know that, like, whether they sell a product or a service is almost secondary to what their true business is, which is data.
Mm-hmm.
Their business is, you know, and whenever you sell the company, which you inevitably do, or, you know, scale it, grow it, go public.
You're selling the data.
The data is at the very core of that company's value.
Yeah.
So we now continue to surrender our data, and these things are paid. So our data and our money and revenue to further feed this machine. And I'm not against progress, but...
Further stratifies,
that's going to put me on edge naturally. Yeah. And then also potentially take away from people who could muscle their way into a middle class living by creating side income from their art.
Damn.
Because there are people who do that, and this, you know, this does paint a clear, no pun intended, but paint a very clear picture of how this could completely run artists out of business and artists as we know them. And now all of our art is computer generated. And then the line between our computer existence and the real existence continues to blur. So it's also just what this, what road this paves, what the implications
would you be able to stomach it if it was stick figures? If it was just like a circle and it didn't have any likeness to you?
But
that's IP, isn't it?
It was made by a computer?
I mean, that's not IP. That's public domain, right? Stick figures?
Sure, I guess.
But it's made by a computer, right? Right.
And if it's made by, I mean, I don't care. I think it is also just like the accuracy facially. Let's be honest. There are a lot of people carrying a few extra pounds that whenever, like they are just like so excited to show off. That's why I wanted to do it.
Oh, and not just that, like muscles and shit. I was like, that person's not that.
They want to see themselves as Captain America. Yeah, and
that's how they get you. It's also a $4.
It's ego. It's just so much fucking ego associated with this. That I'm
so bad.
I'm so sad for how egocentric we are.
But you made a good point that as actors, we need to be wary of where
volunteering our likeness. just
like Brian, you were great in that Lockheed Martin commercial.
People are supposed to pay me money for my likeness, you know, per the terms of like
that's the job,
my talent agreement. Yeah, that's the job. Whether that job will still exist in a few years,
shut up,
who fucking knows. Well, and you say this scared, but you know, this, it's everyone else is selling, you know, themselves, us, the world.
That always leaves sculpture. Out. We could create some beautiful, wonderful.
Have you ever heard of 3D
the
printing?
Best sculpture.
You ever heard of 3D printing? Yeah, it went fucking over.
I went out.
And if you know, this is why universal base income is such a good argument, because tech companies create these products and services based on publicly funded data, research, etc. So we funded their product. We're the reasons why they exist in the first place, but they're going to hoard the wealth. So that's why I think a UBI is justified when you consider to what degree we, you know, and it's funny because they should be paying us for photos of us to make their AI art generator.
And we're paying them.
And we're paying them.
Fuck.
Because they know how fucking vain we are.
We need a contingency plan, because when the water wars break, bro, like, I wish I'd invented the jewel or something.
I know. That would have been nice.
That would have been nice. We got to think of $1 million invention, kid.
But, you know, just off the top of my head, those are like my big hangups with the AIR thing. And
destroy your computer.
And I don't know much, but I know evil when I see it.
Yeah. Same.
And that's what it fucking
That's
because
like. We were raised in the faith.
Yeah, we were raised in the faith. I see.
I suck dick, but I see evil.
Yeah. And I see evil in some dicks, and I don't suck those dicks, you know?
Well.
You know, I look at it as a battle with Satan. Get over here, Satan, you motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. Let me just,
I'm gonna get you.
Wrestle you into my mouth. And grab your balls, too.
That'll show you.
Maybe I'll text him. this was fun. I feel like we're probably at a good...
This is a good point as any.
Yeah. Let's turn this off and get stoned.
Let's hang out. We're going to go out for sushi later.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for staying patient during the holiday break. I got my allergies today, too, so... thanks for kind of letting Julian, thank you, Julian, for shouldering the burden of this while I was like blowing my nose off on the side.
I wasn't sure whether to stop or not.
Nah, bitch, you keep going.
I keep going.
Yeah, you keep going. But, you know, we hope y'all had a great holiday, great Thanksgiving. We have, Christmas and all the other holidays coming up too. So, be safe.
And see all the movies that we talked about, guys.
Yeah, see all the movies. I got movies I need to see before the year's over.
Yeah, I'll rewatch a few with you, gladly.
But this is Brian Bogart Has a Podcast, the podcast. Thank you, everyone, and good night.